Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Do you know if there's any time in the future that there are going to be boots on the ground in Libya?
Not as long as I'm in this job.
That was Congresswoman Colleen Hanabusa from Hawaii and Secretary of Defense Robert Gates. Gates testified to Congress yesterday about the U.S.'s mission in Libya and seemed determined to follow through on President Obama's promise not to involve U.S. ground troops. But our country has promised to help assist the rebels and protect civilians, and one way we could do that is to supply weapons. Now, first we want to take a look at how both sides are currently armed, and then we'll ask, who should arm them? When an important civil war is underway, where do their weapons actually come from? Robert Haddock is the managing editor of Small Wars Journal and a columnist for Foreign Policy magazine, and he joins us to explain. Robert, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much.
Where are the rebels currently getting weapons?
Well, I think the vast majority of the rebels' weapons were looted from warehouses in Libya after this revolution began. Colonel Gaddafi's security forces fragmented, and the warehouses that he had stored this enormous stockpile of weapons that he had acquired over the decades were raided, and rebel forces took off with rifles, machine guns, grenades, ammunition, and so forth, and tried to form up their resistance.
So that would be pretty weak, right, in terms of armament supplies. I think Gates yesterday called it like a pickup ball game.
Well, the biggest problem that the rebels have is not the shortage of armaments. It's their training, and they're really not any kind of military force, and that's the biggest problem that they have right now.
Right. That was Gates's reference, actually, was to command and control deficiencies being like a pickup ball game.
Right. The rebels don't need more weapons and ammunition, I don't believe. What they really need is to go to boot camp, to go to some advanced infantry training. They need to develop effective battlefield leadership, officer corps, and so forth. And that takes months or even years to do. And but that's the road that they have to look down if they're going to be able to challenge the pro-Gaddafi formations.
So if they're getting their weapons by looting Gaddafi's government, where does Gaddafi supply come from?
Well, Gaddafi's stockpile of weapons, he began accumulating those decades ago. In the 1970s and 80s, he was a major buyer of a wide assortment of weapons. His supplier back in those days was mainly the former Soviet Union and the Soviet bloc sources. And several reports that I've read on this have indicated that he acquired such a volume of weapons, and not just small arms, but tanks, infantry fighting vehicles, aircraft, artillery systems, and so forth. But he acquired far more than his army could possibly ever use. He never established a supply system, a maintenance system, a training system to be able to use these things. So the vast majority of them were stored in warehouses all around the country.
Ripe for the pickings by the rebels.
Yes, right, exactly.
But why would Gaddafi have bought so many weapons if his military couldn't digest and use them? What did he have in mind?
Well, I think it was to establish commercial relationships with a wide variety of international partners. In other words, it wasn't that he had a shortage of money. You know, as an oil exporting country, he had plenty of money to spend, and the money wasn't an object for him. I think what he was interested in was establishing commercial and political relationships with other countries. You know, at first it was Soviet bloc countries, and then later on eager weapons companies in Western Europe.
Italy mostly?
Italy and France to a lesser degree, and even the UK with some communication systems and so forth. So, but the, you know, we saw even this past decade when it seemed that the Gaddafi regime was starting to emerge out of the cold, the prospect of arms sales, commercial relationships seemed to be something that would be mutually beneficial to both sides of the equation.
Robert Haddock, managing editor of Small Wars Journal and a columnist for Foreign Policy magazine, as we talk about Libya. Listeners, we're talking about the arms trade, and we'll broaden this discussion a bit from Libya, but on the questions of where the rebels get their arms, where Gaddafi gets his arms, the political and economic implications of each. You can give us a call and ask Robert Haddock a question. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your comments or questions to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Just continuing on that thread for a second, why would a country like Italy or anyone else in Western Europe have sold Gaddafi weapons in recent years? He was seen as an outlier, you know, if not a pariah internationally, by obviously his neighbors in the Arab world, certainly by the U.S. Who did they think that Libya might use its weapons on? Or was this just for their defense industries?
I think it was mostly for their defense industries. The Western European countries have tried to defend their defense industries, keep them economically viable, and their own domestic purchases of weapons by those European countries have not been enough to you know, maintain economies of scale needed in the defense business. So they've had to turn to the export market and external buyers in order to keep these industries viable. And then, you know, before this unfortunate crisis has occurred, over the past 10 years, it seemed as if to many observers that Libya might be emerging from the cold. They gave up their nuclear weapons program in 2003 and seemed to be on something of a more reformist path.
Hey, Robert, I have
that's all gone by the wayside.
I have a really interesting story just moving across the AP wire. This cleared 6 minutes ago, Dateline Benghazi, and it says a plan to sell rebel-held oil to buy weapons and other supplies has been reached with Qatar, the nation of Qatar, a rebel official said Friday, in another sign of deepening aid for Libya's opposition by the wealthy Gulf state after sending warplanes to help confront Muammar Gaddafi's forces. What do you think about that? Rebels holding oil, now selling oil to buy weapons, and Qatar being willing to sell them.
Well, I think it's probably a little theoretical at this point, because the oil export terminals in Italy are right in the center of the front line right now, around the towns of Ras Lanuf and so forth, just south, maybe 100, 150 miles south of Benghazi. Those are some of the major export oil export terminals in Libya. That's where the front line is right now. And, there have to be some dramatic and permanent or, long-lasting swing in the front lines one way or the other for the for oil shipments to resume from Libya.
All right. Now, just to clarify, it's not clear to me whether Qatar would be the country actually selling the weapons to the rebels. Maybe they would just be facilitating the oil sales. Does that make more sense?
Possibly, right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's take a phone call. Al in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wonder, now that NATO has apparently wiped out Gaddafi's air force, or at least grounded it, they have freedom to roam all over Libya and to detect and attack and destroy Gaddafi's ground forces en route to whatever their destination is. We had that capability as long ago as World War II. What's the problem?
Robert?
Well, actually, that described pretty well what occurred in the first week or so of this air campaign. There was a pro-Gaddafi armored column, you know, composed of tanks, infantry fighting vehicles, self-propelled artillery, and so forth, that was moving north to Benghazi, and this was the trigger for the Western intervention in the country. They're trying to hold off this looming humanitarian disaster in Benghazi if this armored column got there. Well, the armored column was attacked. Tanks and APCs were destroyed, and that seemed like a big turning point in the war. The rebels then got on the attack and started moving west towards Tripoli. But you have to have respect for your adversary, and they adapt to the situation, to the pressure that they're under, and what the pro-Qaddafi forces did is they abandoned their armored vehicles, their military vehicles of all kind, and took up in pickup trucks and civilian vehicles and buses and so forth to move around. And so they've adopted irregular warfare, insurgency-type tactics now. And the coalition aircraft, which are circling overhead over Libya right now, are very reluctant to attack civilian vehicles out of fear of either attacking the wrong side, possibly inadvertently attacking rebel pickup trucks, or attacking true civilians and creating a nasty atrocity that could get on the news.
On the question of, and Al, thank you for your call, on the question of where the weapons would come from in this Qatar oil deal with the rebels, the AP says it was not immediately clear when the possible oil sales could begin or how the arms would reach the rebel factions, but any potential revenue stream from the rebel selling oil would be a significant lifeline for the militias and military defectors battling Gaddafi's superior forces. But one thing that seemed to come clear yesterday in Secretary Gates' testimony is that he thinks the U.S. should not be the one selling them weapons. Here's a clip.
The truth is, in terms of providing that training, in terms of providing assistance to them, frankly, there are many countries that can do that. That's not a unique capability for the United States. And as far as I'm concerned, somebody else should do that.
When he said assistance, I believe people took that as referring to weapon sales. So who is that somebody else? Who would?
Well, Secretary Gates is right. This is not a unique a skill unique to the United States. There are many countries and organizations that can provide the military training that the rebels require at this point. The British, French special forces, the Jordanian special forces are very good, and other Arab countries have special forces and military skills that could provide this training. In terms of weapons, purchasing weapons, well, the global weapons market is huge and deep, and it's not any problem to find former Soviet bloc type weapons, you know, Kalashnikovs and so forth, ammunition, that it's not a problem to broker those sorts of transactions.
Alex in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Hello, Brian. I just have a question about comparing this to Afghanistan. I did do a little research on Afghanistan many years ago in college, and it seems to have a lot of similarities where using of Gulf money to purchase Eastern Bloc weapons, in Afghanistan's case from places like China, and then funding and arming people who became al-Qaeda. It seems like in Libya there are a lot of similarities, and I just wondered if your guest could describe what is similar, but more importantly, what is going to be different.
Alex, great question. Thank you very much. And you know that somebody in the government of the U.S. the other day used the term a flicker of al-Qaeda among the rebels.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's one of many risks that U.S. policymakers will have to consider as they ponder what next steps to take with respect to the Libyan situation here. On the one hand, many policymakers seem to have this preference. Well, President Obama himself has expressed it, that they want to get rid of Gaddafi and his family and regime from power. But in order to do that, they're going to have to run risks commit U.S. prestige to the project. And they're going to have to back, the only way to, if you're not going to send the 2nd Marine Division into Tripoli, the only way to get Gaddafi out of power, barring some miracle coup d'etat or something like that, the only way to do it is to build up the rebel army to a sufficient enough strength where it can drive all the way across the country along that coast road all the way to Tripoli. They're far away from having the capacity to do that right now.
I think Alex's question might have been more focused, though, on whether we're arming people we don't know who they are, and they may turn out to be, al-Qaeda, who in power in Libya may be more dangerous to us than Gaddafi was, his reference to Afghanistan.
Well, that's absolutely true. And the CIA officers that are on the ground right now in eastern Libya in the Benghazi area with the rebels are presumably making that assessment right now, trying to collect some basic information on who are the rebels, and they're going to report those findings back to their superiors in Langley and elsewhere, and then policymakers in Washington will have to make a decision about whether they want to take the risks necessary to
empower these folks
to push on with this task.
Though reporters who've covered the rebels during this war so far seem to be coming back with the impression that whether there's a flicker of al-Qaeda in those populations or not, this rebellion is about freedom from Gaddafi. It's not about a religious political agenda. Do you have any reason to disagree with that or to doubt it?
No. I'm sure that the rebel movement has a wide variety of stripes in it. I think, the broadest stripes, in other words, the vast majority, are people that are angry with the Gaddafi regime.
Last thing, we heard the clips of Secretary Gates drawing the line on U.S. involvement and where it will stop. Here is Senator McCain from yesterday who thinks that is not a smart thing to do.
The fact is that your timing is exquisite. At a time when the Gaddafi forces have literally tragically routed the anti-Gaddafi forces, that's when we announced that the United States is abdicating its leadership role and removing some of the most valuable assets that could be used to great effect.
And to add to that, Republican Mike Kaufman of Colorado called this the most muddled definition of an operation probably in U.S. military history. We've got under a minute left. Do you think this is a muddled operation?
I think it was very hastily organized, and the Obama administration did not clearly settle on what their desired end state was, and nor did they develop a strategy for getting from here to that end state. Now they have to decide how much additional prestige and risk they want to take in trying to build up this rebel force into something that's going to be effective. And it's a long, long road ahead.
Do you have a prediction? How long and how will it end?
I think taking him at his word, President Obama's strong preference is to try to turn this over to the Europeans and back away.
Robert Haddock, managing editor of Small Wars Journal and a columnist for Foreign Policy magazine. We so appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, on the media's Brooke Gladstone reveals for the first time on this show which two senators they have narrowed it down to for who put the secret hold on a whistleblower protection bill. Stay tuned.